Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. I want to welcome back our listeners to this week's episode of the Evolving to Exceptional podcast. This week, we have another senior HR leader and professional people leader, Danny Spiros. Danny has spent many years in really interesting roles throughout his career and is doing some really interesting and fascinating stuff in the space of automation and technology and leveraging it that we're going to get into today. But first, Danny, I wanted to give you a chance to introduce yourself. Give us a little bit about your background, who you are, and why it is that you do what you do, why it is that you have a passion for the work that you do every day.
Thanks, Jessica. And thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. I am the VP of People Experience at Automation Anywhere. In my role currently, I lead a team of people across the globe who are hand in hand engaged with our leadership teams and our people around the world to essentially help make all of our people more competent, more able, break down barriers, have all the tools that they need to accomplish the goals of the business. And it's an interesting evolution from when I joined the industry, it was human resources, but not long before that, it was still known as personnel, into people experience at this point. And I think beyond just semantics and nomenclature, I think we've really come to value the contributions and the individuality of people as we transition from human resources into a more people-centered focus. And the pandemic has just wildly accelerated that push. And now that we're coming out, it's another wild acceleration as well. In my past, so I've been in the industry almost long enough to call it personnel, so about 25 years. I've had stacks of file cabinets behind me in the past. Now I have my home background. I work from Phoenix, Arizona, and work for a company that's headquartered in the Silicon Valley Bay Area with offices around the globe. In my career, I've specialized, mostly been a generalist, but had a chance to specialize in benefits and workers' compensation, compensation and total rewards, and twice tried to get out. I joined my family's construction business for a number of years, and specialized in a couple different areas along the way, even tried consulting for a bit. But I found myself drawn back into what it is that people can do to more or less align with the business and feel a pride. One of the things that I loved about construction was the idea that at the end of every day, I could stand back and look up and see what we built. And I realized that that was one of my favorite things about HR was being able to take a step back. You can't necessarily do that every single day, but every couple months, once a year, sometimes in a couple of years, but to be able to stand back and look at the things that I've had an influence in building and then the things that people have accomplished around me, that's what sort of gets me up and gets me going on a day-to-day basis.
I love that you went back to the good old days when I remember early in when I was starting, we still had file cabinets. And I was still faxing background checks and yep. Everything was on paper and printing everything. And a lot has changed in terms of how we approach, like you said, what we call the department from personnel to HR. I actually was never allowed to refer to myself as HR. We always had to refer to me as talent management because our leader didn't want an HR department. There's people experience, there's all these different titles in this evolution. And I even think calling it people rather than employee is a distinction that is relatively new in terms of the path that the people-centered focus has taken. What have you seen be some of the more recent challenges with this as this has evolved over the years? And the focus in terms of the people function within organizations.
One of the neatest things that I'm watching develop, we're essentially living it right now, but it's been happening for a couple of years, is, and you mentioned calling people employees versus people, one of the key distinctions between that is that a lot of our work isn't done by employees anymore. And I think the people function, if we just focus on employees, we miss out on the opportunity that we really have to connect all of the different people that come together to accomplish the goals of a business. And that can include contingent workers, that can include offshore vendor partners, that can include even third-party vendors and channel partners through whom which we sell products and services to our customers. So it's an opportunity for us to really look at all the different people that come together in service of our customers and in building value for our organization. But the wildest thing, and I don't know what we're going to call it just yet, maybe it's the world of talent or maybe it's the world of accomplishment, but we've moved beyond just people doing work now. We talk at automation anywhere. We actually build automations that end up doing some of the rote tasks that people used to do. Even just if we think about the migration from file cabinets to modern HCM platforms that can accomplish some of these things. But beyond that, one of the neat things about automation anywhere, we've got within our own people function, we've got 28 different automations accomplishing the work that would otherwise be done by about 20 to 30% of our staff. And so it's people, which includes all the various people that we use. And it's also the idea that we're leveraging automation to do work as well and artificial intelligence. And that'll continue to grow as a percentage of how we accomplish things. How we measure those things, how we corral those things, how we institute policies around those things and develop the right guardrails and guidelines to be able to leverage that. I think being able to have a stake in the ground and a point of view and a leadership role in our function, I think is an exciting opportunity and quite honestly, a monumental challenge for the function over the coming years.
So you hit on a lot there. I'm going to unpack a bit.
Where do we start unpacking?
This is an exciting topic. It's my favorite too. I love that you come from an automation company and background. I think I love that you pointed out that there's more people today than just the employee, that there's this broader landscape we have to look at. That isn't something I've necessarily thought about before. And I think it's a really impactful point for us to consider as the types of relationships that we're engaging in and the types of partnerships and suppliers and vendors and contractors and the way that we intermingle those things to accomplish work is really shifting a lot in that space. And I think, you know, your point that in the old days, when 20, 30 years ago, whatever, 10 years ago, even in some cases, so it's really not that far back anymore, some of the things that we did were mindless tasks. It didn't really take a lot of thought or intellect to file paper or in manufacturing industries or different. There's a lot of different tasks that were performed by humans, but could be performed by machines, were repeatable enough that they could be automated. And the last, you know, couple decades, there's been, and I come from an automation background, industrial automation, and the past few decades have really been focused on that automation and automating away a lot of those tasks. So it makes sense that historically we looked at people maybe as just another part of the machine because they were just doing those tasks or doing those basic activities. But it seems as though the type of work that both people want to do and we really want them doing has changed and fundamentally. How does that impact how we look at our people?
I think one of the big things is, like you talked about, so we're capable of so much more than just accomplishing a task or doing one continuous motion over and over again. And I think it has an opportunity, one, in a knowledge economy, but even in economies. So I mentioned I was in construction, but even in economies and industries where physical work is still a component that will get slowly replaced by some layers of automation and machinery and has over the years, the idea that people can problem solve and that people can have some amount of autonomy and truly use our brains for what they were designed for and evolved to, as opposed to just doing repetitive tasks over and over, is it has an opportunity to just vastly change. Instead of a top-down dictating rules, organizations, tasks, responsibilities, but truly making each and every person within an organization capable of making decisions with the context and the tools that they need to be able to do that, it's got the opportunity to dramatically change our productivity. And it requires us to trust people in a way that, and it's evolving. And I'm not saying this is overnight. In fact, this has been going on for decades, but we're continually putting more trust and more responsibility in the hands of people on the very front lines and everywhere in between. And it's important to us in my space, in my industry, in my companies, but across a lot, it's important for all of us to be able to make sure that the people have the right tools, education, experience, backgrounds, to be able to make the decisions in the moment that move the company forward, move our customers forward. And that comes from a variety of places. So it can come from experience, or it can come from the training and education that we provide. It can come from the context and the transparency we provide as an organization. And it can come from, transparency, context. And it just takes a whole lot to build up the trust that we have in people and their capability of delivering that in service of our customers.
And what I love about what you just talked about is it is evolving, it is changing. And from a purely, and maybe I'm biased because this is evolving, my company is evolving to Exceptional, but is that we are human beings, and human beings by our nature are meant to be evolving. Mm-hmm. So being able to evolve and tap into that intelligence of our people and use it more in the execution of our work and the work that they do every day, and provide them that opportunity to build that trust and to make those decisions is really exciting and has a lot of potential. And there's a lot of opportunity for really great things to come from that. And there's also a lot of fear and a lot of risk and a lot of challenges that come from that. Can you talk just a little bit maybe about the both sides of those coin, maybe starting either place, the challenges or the benefits that we need to be aware of as we're embarking on this really unique journey to more automation and more technology usage in our workplaces?
Yeah. One thing that's been a big deal in the last few years and will continue to evolve as some of these things change is just the idea of information privacy and the personal information that we each hold. So any organization now, just within its customer information, but certainly within our function, I've spent decades, you've spent decades dealing with the personal information of all of our people. And certainly within our field, but across all industries, the idea of protecting personal information, company information, trade secrets, and things along those lines, even national secrets for that matter. The more information we put in the hands of our people, the more vulnerable that information is. And it's important for, and this is no new thoughts here, but it's important to be able to have the appropriate guardrails and guidance around those kinds of things. And building up that level of transparency and trust and access to information comes with responsibility, both on the part of the organization and the individual, which is a huge challenge that we're going to continue to confront as we move to AI and different models. So my company we put out our quarterly cybersecurity training, and thankfully I passed it. But the subject of this quarter's cybersecurity training was how to interact with AI models. It's okay to use them, but here's some things you need to think about. Don't feed our customers information in there. Don't feed personal information in there, which is all valid. And these are the kinds of things that as an automation company, we know. But it's important for companies to think about these kinds of things right now, is that we've got all these new tools to disseminate information to our people and all these new and exciting opportunities for that information to slip through cracks. And it's going to be a challenge for companies and something that to some extent keeps me and plenty of other people up at night. I want to have access to the information and the context. I also want to make sure that we're fulfilling our obligations to all of our people and customers, and it's a two-way street.
Absolutely. And I think that's so amazing. That was your cybersecurity topic. I have a soft spot in my heart because of in my past life, I was a leader around the IT space, and we experienced a ransomware attack and learned firsthand the cybersecurity, the damage that can be done in those types of situations. And I think you almost can't underestimate the lack of potential knowledge of how what we feed AI or what we put into AI may impact our businesses or even our lives. Like you talked about personal information into AI. AI can only look at artificial intelligence and the tools that are now available to us can only look at information that it's given. So it can't look at hypothetical scenarios or how to engage or make good decisions as we would as a human being. It can't do that. And so the more that we feed it and what we feed it is going to impact what it tells us or what comes out of it. And I think spreading that awareness is really important, actually, as you point out, in the fact that your organization is focused on it. What do you see as potentially some of the areas where AI could really bring value or be used or leveraged from a people experience standpoint?
I mean, it's infinite, but a couple of use cases that we've already started to explore. I was speaking with my team this morning and yesterday about it. We are in the process of developing a compensation automation where essentially it's as simple as entering an employee ID number into the UI that's tied to our HCM platform. And it will retrieve that person's employment history, their performance history, their compensation history, but it'll also go out and pull market data for that particular position. So not just from our own grades and ranges, but go actually pull the market data from that. And then through a generative AI link, we'll display a handful of potential interventions and commentary around what's next and what to look for and ideas around any sort of discrepancies or variations that they see. And these are the kinds of things that I've done. But it takes, I don't know, give or take an hour, depending on how fast I am. And I've got people that have worked for me in the past that are faster than that. And it also takes anywhere from 1 to 20 years of experience to be able to generate that. So if we can take the 20 years of experience and the mechanics and combine those into something that's more of a click of a button for our compensation teams and leverage automation and generative AI in the process, it's a time save, but it also, there are entire decisions that we make around compensation for an organization because we don't have the time to do things like this. And so it instantly gives us an opportunity to rethink how we approach compensation from a market data standpoint and an individualized standpoint, as opposed to the sort of traditional annual review. Run it through a handful of scenarios and then spit out the results. On the flip side, it also gives us an opportunity to really tackle pay parity for women, for minorities, for underrepresented people. And it gives us an opportunity to really tackle some of those issues and look at them in a more objective standpoint.
So that's, it's so interesting how you're in a dream world, I think, for what most HR people have, because you've got this access to people that can do these automations and find that data or that information. And as organizations like yours are able to kind of master and then put that out, make that available to other organizations, some of those solutions can really make a big difference. Like you were talking about with the pay disparity and identifying those things and eliminate some of the things that really create a negative employee experience for the HR professionals who are having to do them or having to pull together just data and just be a collector of information or do those very administrative and not fun, mundane tasks, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a couple different things. It's getting rid of some of the mundane tasks. It's allowing us to solve problems that we wouldn't have been able to solve without this kind of automation. And even down to the super individual level, we've both done this, but having the conversation with somebody who's disappointed about their pay increase wasn't exactly what they thought, is a tough conversation, but having that with the appropriate data and information, sometimes the appropriate data actually changes our minds around, did we do the right thing? But having those conversations with the right data and some talking points that can be built into that just changes the experience for the person on my team that has that conversation, the person on the other end who's asking those questions, and gives us a chance to create a better sense of trust between the person and the company around how we're paying people, how this impacts them, what their opportunities are for the future, and where they need to leverage that.
You're right. Those are really impactful implications, the downstream implications of being able to access that data and look at that information in that way. What are some of the risks in how we use AI as an HR and how we implement those? So even in your example there, what if AI gets it wrong, or its information is outdated, or gets it wrong isn't totally fair because it'll be based on its programming, but your thoughts on that?
I think it's gets it wrong, I think, is a fair way to look at it, because you mentioned AI knows what we've put into it. And we have to differentiate between putting in historical information versus what we think of as the right information. So if we just feed AI everything that's been done if you could somehow bottle up everything that's been done in human resources for the last 15 years and put that into AI, we would put in the history of any sort of discrimination in the workplace or inadvertent inequities that have happened in the workplace, the language modeling that gets used in job descriptions and things along those lines that may or may not even look at experience requirements and college requirements and how that impacts people from different backgrounds that may not have had the opportunity to go to college or work at the same companies before, but have gained the skills and experience needed through alternate methods. So if we feed all the past into AI and don't compensate for what we should have done differently, then AI will get it right, but it will be wrong.
And that's the scary part, right? Exactly. That's the part that I think those of us that, the people that are raising flags, the people that have real concerns, that are significant concerns, I think, around AI and its potential to misapply or misuse the information that we give it if we don't, I would say, consciously make decisions about how to use it. So I guess maybe that's the question, is what do we need to be doing with our people so that they are using their talent, their humanness, to make good conscious decisions? Because one thing AI can never be is conscious, right? AI is by definition not conscious. So thoughts on that?
Automation anywhere, we use a term, and this may be an industry term, but I'm newer to the industry, but human in the loop. And that's like AI can do a certain amount of the work. The automation can do a certain amount of the work, but we need a human to make the final decision. Is this the right thing? And so by leveraging automation and AI, we're taking some of the time that we would have otherwise spent doing some of the research and drafting and some of those things, but we're giving us the time to do the editing, the review, the thoughtful analysis, even like a gut check. Does this make sense? Is this the right thing to do? And so it gives us that opportunity to be the human in the loop and edit and make the right improvements that we need to be able to use it. So we can't and we shouldn't just trust AI to do all of our work for us. It never will. What it does is it gives us the ability to do more of what our brains are designed to do. And that's critical thinking.
When it comes back to something you mentioned earlier, in that if that is the case, then we're actually going to probably need more people making those conscious decisions as they interact with AI and automation in the work that they do every day. And whereas in the past, potentially leaders, that top-down model you talked about held control of those decisions or were the checkpoint. There's all kinds of processes to being in sales. There was a sales review process that you always had to go through of a certain level of proposal. And things like that, where leaders have to get engaged on activities. But the truth is that in a world with AI and automation and the technology that we have, that there's likely going to be less ability for leaders to be involved in all those decisions without substantially hampering productivity and effectiveness and potentially negating the benefits of the technology in the first place. So how do you start to both ways have leaders trust people to make decisions and have people feel trusted enough to be able to make those decisions, feel like they have the skills they need to make a good decision about how to use that technology?
We're up-leveling people, whether we like it or not, whether we're ready for it or not, it's happening. I've chosen to embrace it. It's not necessarily comfortable even for me at times, but it's been interesting to watch. So then when I talked earlier about construction and being able to stand back and look at what's been done, just anecdotally, I've had the opportunity to work with somebody. So when I said somebody between 1 and 20 years of experience in compensation could do that kind of analysis, in the past, I would have thought 20 years is about 10 to 20 years is about what's required. I've seen people that, and worked with one in particular, who have been able to leverage some of the automation that comes with this and the information that's at our fingertips to be able to process more of these faster than I did when I was early in my career, have access to view more information than I did when I was earlier in my career, have more detailed conversations around why we do some of the different things we do, put more information into our systems. All of these things are just happening at a faster clip with more volume going through them. And so people who are early in their career are getting more experience in 1 or 2 years than I did in my first 5 to 10 years. And it's exciting to see that. And it's also exciting to see the output that people with 1 to 2, 3, 4 years of experience can develop the level of expertise that would have otherwise taken a decade, because they've got the ability to process more of these, see more examples, learn from each one, and move forward. So it truly requires leaders less to be making the decisions and more to be educating, which I feel like was our job to begin with as leaders, that if all we're doing is making decisions or if all we're doing is making rules, then we're missing out on the opportunity of the people that work for us and with us. And now that we're in this environment, it really gives us the opportunity to lean in on educating, providing context, and helping people grow so that they can be that human in the loop at earlier stages in their career and with more information, and honestly, even higher levels of responsibility and authority.
So something that came to mind as you're talking about that, that's interesting, is I've seen the same thing, that escalated growth path, that movement to, or that greater depth of experience more quickly. And we've also seen, especially in recent years, we all had to evolve much faster to adapt to the changes that came from the pandemic and things that probably would have taken longer than they did, almost definitely, if not for that experience. And we've also seen in much higher levels of quiet quitting. Gallup just released it's up to 60%. We've seen higher levels of disengagement, higher levels of burnout for sure in the workplace. And I'm wondering a little bit if that the two are somewhat correlated, maybe not. Maybe there's causation, but at least correlation between the two. And whether if people are having to adapt so quickly or learn so quickly, what we have to do to support them or to give them the training and the development and the feedback and the coaching that they need more quickly, because they don't have 10 years to get it. They've got 2 or something. What are your thoughts?
I love that. It's a challenge and it's an opportunity. And it's quite honestly for our profession, probably one of the biggest challenges we're going to face is this sort of roller coaster that we've had over the last several years between it being an employee's market, an organization's hiring market. We talk about war for talent. We talk about the sort of rising wages over the last couple of years now, at least within the technology space, the layoffs that we've experienced in the last year. And it's a constant back and forth, and there's a ton of churn and tumult in there. And it's difficult for leaders, it's difficult for managers, it's difficult for employees, and it's particularly difficult for people who are in the space where they're looking for employment. And how we can help through some of this is, you know, one of the things that we've targeted, at least at our organization over the last couple of years, so even before I joined the organization, was truly helping our managers and all of our people leaders adapt to this changing environment so that they can be the ones to help everybody else through this changing environment. And I never really got the benefit of this, but had I worked for a company like General Electric or General Motors or Honeywell or something along those lines 30, 40 years ago, if I were a manager, I would have gone through hundreds of hours of management training. And in today's environment, we don't necessarily put our managers through hundreds of hours of manager training. We tend to promote people on the fly who are capable, show potential, have some of the qualities that it would take to be a good manager, and then do a lot of their sort of training in management on the job through mentorship and other training programs. And I think in doing so, who has the time to put managers through thousands of hours of manager training anymore in this type of economy? But in doing so, we miss out on the opportunity to truly empower our leaders to be better leaders and to really move the company forward. At Automation Anywhere, we saw a trend in that at one point as we were A, starting to expand on exponential growth, and then B, starting to settle in on where we were as an organization and what our future looked like with moderate growth. And we identified that we, like every other company, had managers who didn't have all of the experience in the world. We had a group of leaders who had great experience and a group of leaders who were promoted into the role based on their potential, not so much their experience. And it was an opportunity across the board to up-level our leaders. One of the questions we ask in every quarter survey is, would you recommend your manager to a friend or colleague and family member? And so it's the NPS methodology. A score of 9 and 10 is a promoter. Then you've got your neutrals, and then everything 6 and below is a detractor. And we look at that from the NPS methodology. And when we started doing this a couple of years ago, we had scores in the 30s, which is positive and really strong. This last quarter, we're in the mid-50s. And we've seen tremendous growth by narrowing in on two things that we were doing for managers. One is tailored training opportunities that we gave our leadership teams, gave them access to a platform that provides a ton of management training. We curated a number of classes, and we encouraged all of our managers to go out and put in 25 hours over the course of a year. Yeah, 2 hours a month. We, for the most part, have light meeting Fridays. At once upon a time was no meeting Fridays, but light meeting Fridays. So we provide opportunity for our people to do that. It's not just take on this other task in addition to all your other tasks, but take the opportunity, go learn a little bit more about what it takes to be a good leader. And simultaneously, we built an automation that takes surveys from our managers, surveys from their employees, and combines to create like a 3-page PowerPoint with essentially all the interventions that a manager might want to take with a particular employee based on their survey responses about their career and their aspirations and growth, and the manager survey responses around the person and their potential and their impact on the organization. So by putting those two together, it's like, here's the training, and then here's exactly what we can do through automation. That's how we've increased our scores on that, and that's how we've attacked that unwanted attrition through challenging times in the workplace, through a pandemic, through ups and downs in the roller coaster of the tech space at the moment, and really just made it more of a personal connection that people have with their managers. And now it gives us an opportunity to lean on managers to leverage that relationship. And then manager NPS score in the 50s is phenomenal. I've never seen that kind of result before. And so it gives us a huge potential to lean on our leadership team to help people through some of these challenges and grow and develop in a faster paced environment that we're in.
I think what your organization is doing is just fantastic. I think it's a model for the organizations that are not making that type of investment. And I think I said this in another interview I did recently, where I talked about that, you know, some leaders get to the top and they think they don't need any more development. They're good. And in the world today, the skills that are required for great leadership, like we've been talking about in this context of technology, are different than the skills that were required 20, 30 years ago. And it's not that those skills are no longer relevant. Like, you still need those skills. You still need good communication. You still need some of those foundational skills. But it's more that there's this whole new set of skills that we have to have as leaders that weren't necessarily part of the framework before. And I just completed a neuro leadership assessment with an organization out of Australia that's based on the neuroscience of performance and human performance, and met with the leader of that company. And she talked about how that new model, leaders, when they take it, when they get into that new model, when they get into some of these new skill sets that aren't traditional leadership, there's just these huge gaps. There's these huge deficits in terms of their self-awareness of some of the challenges that they have as leaders with building trust, with how they're seen ethically, with how they pay attention to their own performance in a way that creates good results rather than just working harder and longer and all of those things. And how, if you're not doing anything, then there's going to be no growth. There's going to be no evolving if leaders aren't engaging in the training. So I just love that you guys are doing and have that focus and allow your leaders that time, because that time should be translating right back into return. Because if you go to the neuroscience side of it, by spending time learning, growing, doing training, some of those things, especially if it's done well, if it applies those kind of neuroscience principles in how they deliver the training, that will free up the brain to come up with new ideas, to be more creative, to be more innovative, to do all the things we want our people to be doing in order to leverage the technology, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I've been in environments where we have no money to spend on things like that, in environments where we have a lot. And I mean, this type level of investment is middle of the road. It doesn't take a whole lot. 25 hours over the course of a year is a small amount, but the impact it can deliver is pretty big. And so it more than pays for itself, even in one month at a time, but certainly by the end of the year. And you're right, like, what I need to know now as a leader versus what I needed to do 10 years ago were wildly different. And if anything, if we can help managers and leaders understand that and recognize it, that's a huge first step.
So I've got to ask, because you guys do track engagement metrics, doing those things, have you seen it impact? How are your disengagement or quiet quitting, like, how do your metrics measure up to what the national or global metrics are saying? Are they better? Are they the same?
So I mean, we're seeing increases and improvements in our sort of our employee NPS. So it's one barometer for engagement. We're also, what we're really looking at, so employee NPS is a decent survey around, I guess, employee sentiment. How much do I like my job? Would I be willing to recommend it to somebody else? The other component that we're really trying to pull in, and we haven't nailed this, and I don't know that we ever will. I think this is an opportunity for ongoing improvement, is really tying each employee's and each person's and all of our people's engagement and activities and alignment to the outcome of the organization, which truly is a reflection of the outcome of our customers. And we're looking at that as impact. So what kind of impact can people have? And I think this is old news at this point, but we're long past foosball tables. We don't even have space in the office that people only come to a couple days a week for that kind of stuff. But I think the idea of being able to tie what I do, what each and every individual does, to the outcome is pretty powerful from an engagement standpoint. And we're working towards doing that. And from that point of view, we're in early stages of developing our baselines around that, but we've seen moderate improvements from what we've at least started to survey. And that's the idea that, like, what's our overall if we were a manufacturing facility, what's our overall productivity? But we're not. We're a knowledge-based company with different inputs and outputs. But what's the impact that each person is having on the future of the company, the future of our customers, and the future of the globe? And the more we can do that, I think the better we'll be able to truly analyze, like, how good are we doing as a function and as an organization? But making progress on measuring it and moderate progress on what we've seen in trends there.
So it'll be interesting because, yeah. And that was a little bit of a trick question because we're right in the midst of it, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect, actually, it makes sense that things don't look great right now because organizations just figured out that there is a real problem and it's going to take whatever solutions we're implementing right now. It's probably going to take a year or two and take some time to get those changes in and see the differences, which kind of brings me to my one more question I have around the technology and the AI, which is the biggest problem, the biggest challenge I always had as an IT and technology leader, and I think organizations have, is adoption of the technology, of the automation, of the using what is available to us. How do you overcome that challenge? How do you overcome the resistance to change to allow these efficiencies and opportunities to be realized in the workplace?
A big part of it is design. If we design for the way people want to or can most easily interact with the technology as opposed to how we've done it in the past, I found that that's a huge hurdle to adoption. So if we make things easier and more intuitive than they were, then it's a much faster adoption. I've seen that in HCM platforms as those have evolved over the last couple of years. And I've seen that in terms of some of the developments that we're doing. So if we can essentially meet people in the space that they're already in, so if it's rather than having to log out of one system, go into another system, do some work, copy, paste, bring it back, if we can essentially engage in native automations and connections, and also at the same time rethink, we used to have approval processes that would have to go to this person and then over here and then over here and back down. And if we can think about our business process at the same time that we think about automating, would I automate that exact same thing or would I do something different and spit out a report to each of those people as opposed to trying to connect all of those different steps as part of an approval process? And you can build either, but what's best for the organization going forward? What provides the most useful information at the appropriate time? And what matches the speed of business today? All of this is faster, but we can do even better.
And it brings you back again to the decision making and the why are we having all these people sign off on this particular form? Why is there this approval process? What is its purpose? Is it because we all want to know the information? Is it because we don't trust each other to make a decision? So all 10 people have to agree on the decision. What's the issue? And sometimes I think what we find or what I've found in organizational process like that is that there's legacy limiting beliefs or there's legacy fears that exist due to something that's ineffective in terms of the collaboration or performance of the organization, that we've built a process or a system or even a technology around a problem rather than address the underlying challenge and change our culture, or change how we interact or how we manage people. Instead, we've used technology and made our lives more difficult rather than do that. So I love that example. And I think, again, it just highlights, and I feel like it just keeps coming back to how important leadership, but people decision-making really is in this kind of new world of work and in this technology-heavy arena where how we think and how we make decisions and why we make the decisions that we do is going to have significant implications for our lives, our customers' lives. You mentioned the impact on the world and how we're going to impact all those things. So I just love this conversation. I think we could go on for hours and hours.
Me too. Thank you, Jessica.
I want to give you a chance, Danny, if there's anything you want to share, anything you want to highlight to our listeners around this topic or just in general.
One thing that really struck me. So when I interviewed for this job, one of the comments that our CEO made to me was, there are no mediocre people. There are only mediocre opportunities. And it was a great sort of synthesis for me around why we do the things that we do and how we make decisions. And what a tremendous opportunity we have in front of us at this moment to be able to think about our people in terms of the opportunities that we can create for them and for ourselves, our companies, and our customers, as opposed to just focusing on, rote performance ratings and things along those lines, that we can leverage the technology and the tools that are available to us right now to truly tap into the capabilities of our people, give them amazing opportunities, exponentially improve the opportunities in front of us as an organization. And I'm a thinker along these lines, but I think that has the opportunity to impact us on a community level and on the global level over time. That the more we can do this, the more satisfaction we'll see, better opportunities, even things along the lines of wage equality around the globe. So I think there's tremendous opportunities in front of us. I'm excited to be a part of it. I have to admit, there are days when I think I'm just barely hanging on to this wave and I don't want to let it pass me by. So there's some fear involved in that. And there's also the hope and the carrot in front of us. Those are the things that keep me awake and keep me going.
Yeah, I love the quote that there's no mediocre people, there's just mediocre opportunities. I think it highlights the fact that most people want to do good work, they want to do their best work, and that it's up to us to support them to figure out how to make or create an environment and workplace where they can do that work, where we match them with that work. And my old IT manager always used to say, and I love the quote, and he's my friend too, used to say, you can do anything you want with technology, anything you want. We can make it happen. It's possible. The possibilities are limitless. You have to start with the decision of what it is you want to do with it, how you want to use it, the ways you want to use it, the decisions you're going to make on when and where to use it are the human consciousness, are the human decision-making component. And that is the part that probably requires more attention and focus than it ever has in the past. And the need for that capability to be developed thoroughly in as many people as possible. And so the more we can bring that growth, that development, the training like you're doing with your managers out into the world, then like you, I believe that more people will be able to live better lives, that we can create a world where we exist in a better way than we do today or we have before by using technology to our advantage rather than to our disadvantage. So Danny, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation. It's one of my favorite topics. I love where technology meets people and talent. And I just am so grateful that you came on today. And to all of our listeners out there, just a reminder to always keep evolving, keep growing, keep enjoying that experience that you're having on your performance journey, on your performance mountain, whatever that looks like in your life, and never stop growing. So have a wonderful day and a wonderful week, and we will be back next week with another episode. Have a fantastic day.